is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Bob Walsh from Providence College, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E, and use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's A-R-Y-S-E.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel, and we are here. NBA trade season, Jason.
It's not only trade season; the season is upon us, Mike. I was thinking
we might have to do our NBA preview tonight, in addition to the trades and the mock draft.
I don't think we can do the preview, and here's why we can't do the preview: because who the hell knows who's going to be on what team?
The preview is going to have to be posted on December 21st, or maybe the morning of December 22nd. I'm not sure.
Oh yeah, might have to be. So obviously, as that relates, we've got the NBA today. Before we get into the trades, the NBA today released the schedule format for the season. And what I find, the first thing I find interesting, Mike, and I don't know if you saw this, is they're going to release the first half of the season's calendar December 1st, and they're going to wait to release the second half of the calendar for later in the season. And I find that interesting, but it also makes a lot of sense with everything going on. I think this gives them flexibility, unlike what the NFL has pigeonholed themselves in and what the MLB pigeonholed themselves in. I think this allows them the flexibility that if they have to make adjustments to how they do their schedule, this allows them to do that. What do you think about that?
Are you thinking that they're going to make adjustments in terms of the total number of games, the locations of games outbreaks? What do you think? What adjustments do you think they can make?
Well, I think what they're going to do is that if they have games that get canceled, this allows them to have flexibility to try to reschedule and fit them into the schedule and have some kind of flexibility. Whereas if they release the whole schedule and then say like in January they have five games that gets canceled, then they have to find a spot to put those five games in. Whereas if they have some working, scaffolding calendar that they can mess around with and manipulate to get the games evened out, I think that makes, to me, that's immediately when I saw that, that's why they're doing it, in my opinion.
It makes sense, but here's the thing that is different, and I guess it's not so different from baseball, but it's certainly different from football. When you're only playing once a week in the NFL and you have to postpone a game, or guys are midweek in the COVID protocol or whatever it is, in the NBA, you go into the COVID protocol for 4 or 5 days and you could miss 2 or 3 games in that time. And so I think it's more difficult to, quote, make up games in the NBA because you just have more games, and guys who end up having to sit out or teams who are quarantined are going to have to miss more games because you just cram more games in a shorter period of time. So I do think that building in that flexibility is good. Just like anything else, though, I'm not sure what that actually looks like when it comes down into practice. If teams are missing 3, 4, 5, 6 games because the entire team is quarantined or a certain portion of the team is quarantined, I don't know. Obviously, the bubble worked exceedingly well, as we've talked about over and over again, and it's clearly obvious. But you go into this situation, and man, who knows? I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how different this looks when you're not putting people into a bubble and they got to play. I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I agree. But I just think that this – I think their theory – I'm not necessarily going to – we'll see if the theory works. Their theory is if they do this, they can have some kind of flexibility. That's my opinion.
Makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
So then they're going to have an all-star break the 5th through the 10th, but that's not going to consist of an all-star game. They've completely canned the all-star game, which makes sense. Give the players a week. Here's my concern.
Do they name an all-star team?
They are going to name an all-star team. They've said they are going to name an all-star team. All the things that would go with an all-star week, as in like bonuses for players making an all-star team, are still going to happen. They're going to still have votes and everything. It's just not going to have a game. I think they want to try to be as realistic as they can, but also keep things as traditional as they can. I mean, let's be honest. LeBron needs to keep getting those all-star
you got to keep racking those up for his all-time greatest of all time.
So then, So the second half of the season is going to go through May 16th. So that's obviously later. And then they're going to have a play-in tournament. Now, this is interesting. I like what they're doing for the play-in tournament. Okay, so they're going to have the 7-8 team game. They're going to play, Mike. And then the winner of the 7-8 game moves on. And then the loser of the 7-8 game will play the 9-10 game, I think is the way I read that, right? Yes. So the 7-8 game will be between the teams ranked 7th and 8th, while the 9-10 game will feature the teams ranked 9th and 10th. The winner of the 7-8 team will advance to the playoffs. The loser will host the winner of the 9-10 game, as had been previously reported. So what they're going to do is they're going to have the 7-8 team play a game. Whoever wins that game moves on. And then the 9-10 game is going to happen, and then they're going to those two teams, the loser of the 7-8 plays against the winner of the 9-10. I think that's cool. I like that. I think that's exciting. That puts a lot of, you know, if you're the 9-10 seed, you have to win two games. If you are the 7-8 seed, you could just win the first game, but you get two chances to win. I think that's a cool concept, in my opinion.
Two to make one, for the 7-8 seeds, and the 9-10s each have to win.
My favorite outcome would be the 7 seed losing to the 8 seed and then losing to the 10 seed. I think that's my favorite possible outcome.
I mean, it's certainly possible. I mean, again, you look at what teams have occupied those 7-8 spots in various years, especially in the Eastern Conference, and it's not like you're looking at powerhouse teams that, boy, there's no chance the 10 seed could ever beat the 7 seed.
Here's the way I think about it. Do you think if the Cavs played against the Orlando Magic, they could have a shot at knocking them off? I totally do. I don't think they're better than the Orlando Magic, but I think that could happen.
Well, you're looking at a one-game situation
exactly,
where the results are far more random than it is over the course of a 7-game series. So, yeah, I think typically you would say that if you played an NBA 7-game series, even a 5-game series, unlikely that those upsets are going to happen, or they're going to just not happen quite as frequently. But in a 1-game situation, I mean, you see it all the time. I mean, teams that are at the very bottom of the league beat the best teams. Now, it's a little bit different because clearly the stakes are much higher in those games than they would be in a regular season game. But still, yeah, you open up the possibility for upsets. And like I said, I don't know how much of an upset a 10 seed versus a 7 seed really is anyway. So
yeah,
that's fun. Right. I agree. I think it's something that the league definitely, I think, is smart to include. And I think it's going to become a staple, a fixture moving forward.
Yep. All right. And then the last thing, Mike, this is the bearer of bad news to you here. I'm just going to read this to you. I want your unbridled reaction. The NBA Finals are set to run through July 22nd, with the Summer Olympics set to begin July 23rd, and the qualifying tournaments for the remaining four spots in the men's field scheduled to run from June 29th to July 4th. That almost certainly eliminates a number of players from considering participating in the Olympic Games. Your reaction?
I mean, personally, I don't really care that much about whether or not NBA players participate. I could make an argument it'd be more fun if we went back to the way it was 20 or 30 years ago when you had just college guys participating. We would lose a lot more. But it would probably be a much more competitive situation in a lot of cases, or maybe it would be uncompetitive. I don't know. Maybe we'd get killed every time. But if we had enough time to prepare with college guys, I think we'd be fine. I still think that there's going to be a way for NBA players to participate. Clearly, if, just as an example, the Lakers go all the way to the finals and they play game 7 on July 22nd, I don't think LeBron is suiting
up. I think there's
up.
Zero chance LeBron's playing in the Olympics.
I don't think that LeBron suits up on July 23rd, let's put it that way.
I don't think he suits up at all. I don't think there's no way that he's going to go from having this shortened offseason, and whether he takes off until the middle of January, I don't know what they're...
He wants to play for Pop, man.
Okay. No, there is zero chance he's not going
to
take...
He wants to play for Pop, man. He's got a tremendous amount of respect for Coach
Mike,
Pop.
Mike, there is zero chance. Listen, think about this, Mike, and I want your honest reactions, answer to this. I don't want... Do you think if after Game 7, or after Michael Jordan's sixth title, they had the Olympics one day after, there is zero chance Michael Jordan plays in the Olympics? Zero.
Look, I don't think either one of them would play in that situation. It would be ridiculous to even speculate the fact that they would. And if you were really putting together a team, which I'm assuming that team is still going to be made up of NBA players. It's just going to be made up of NBA players that have been eliminated.
Colin Sexton, you might got a chance, buddy.
Maybe. I mean, you know, you're going to look at a totally different pool of players than what you might normally look at, because those players who are superstars that are leading their teams deep into the playoffs are probably not going to play. So I still think that the NBA ends up fielding that roster. The U.S. Olympic team ends up being NBA players.
Will it be better than the last Olympic roster that they fielded?
I don't know. It still comes down to, I think, that you could take a second-tier group of players from the NBA and you should still be able to win the Olympics if you have enough time to prepare as a team. And again, I don't know what enough time to prepare is for throwing a bunch of NBA guys together to turn them into a cohesive unit. Is that 6 weeks? Is that 4 weeks? Is that 2 weeks? I have no idea what the prescription in terms of the amount of time that's necessary for them to become a team. But you think about these international competitions, and basically when you're talking about teams that are recognized as threats to the United States, the way they're recognized as threats is because, oh, Croatia has 7 NBA players, or Yugoslavia, which doesn't even exist, but Serbia or Croatia has such and such number of NBA players. That's how we qualify whether or not a team is a threat to the United States. And we're talking about NBA players. We're not talking about superstar NBA players. We're talking about they have guys who are on NBA rosters. And so certainly we should be able to put together a better team, enough guys that are more than just guys at the back end of a roster. We should be able to put together a team that has some all-star players and some high-quality guys. And it's just a matter of, do we have enough time to prepare under that timeline in order to get into the Olympics? So, yes, I would say any player who goes past the first round of the playoffs, you would certainly have to think is not going to participate in the Olympics. But conversely, let's take it the other way. So if Luka makes it to the conference finals next year and he loses and he has 2 weeks before the Olympics are going to start, does he play in the Olympics?
Probably.
I think there's a pretty good chance. He's young. Well, I think there's a pretty good chance that a lot of these guys from foreign countries, that if they have the opportunity to play, one, I think there's pressure from their home fans and their home basketball organizations to participate. And two, I think that there's just a greater sense of having grown up kind of in those systems, and those guys feel a greater connection, I think, to their teammates, because there's just less elite level players in all those countries than there are here in the United States, where it's just not the same level of loyalty and camaraderie from a national team perspective that a lot of these foreign countries have. So I would expect that a lot of the guys who are the foreign players here in the U.S., that even if that timeline and playing, which you're right, I think any NBA American superstar who makes it past the first round of the playoffs, I would be highly, highly doubtful any of those guys would play in the Olympics.
All right. Okay, I think we spent enough time on the schedule speculating on the Olympics. Let's get to the meat and potatoes. Andre Drummond picked up his player option.
How do you not pick up $29 million when there's nowhere near that waiting for you anywhere in free agency? So,
well, there was rumors that he wasn't going to pick it up, and I'm like, guys, there's zero chance Andre Drummond's not picking up his $29 million player option. Okay, well, that's not really what we're here to talk about.
It goes for anybody who has a player option, right? The thing you're weighing is, do you take that 1 year at a high number, which is probably a higher annual number than you can get, or if Drummond or Gordon Hayward or any of these guys?
I mean, what's Drummond going to get on the market? Like $10 million a year, $15 million.
But I'm just saying, I can't imagine anyone's paying him more than that. And you opt out of $29 million for 1 year, and you go and you sign a contract for 4 years at $60 million. Does that make sense? I don't know.
No,
but
it doesn't.
But is he going to get? Is he going to get more after getting that $29 million? I guess if he stays healthy, that 4 year, $60 million contract is going to still be there next year.
Yeah.
But I guess my point is, you're still weighing. Yeah. If he has a catastrophic knee injury this year and can't come back and play, or is a shell of what he was before, if he has a Boogie Cousins situation. And you go from being, and I don't think anybody would argue that Drummond has been or was at the same level as Cousins was. But, I mean, Cousins is not getting any more paydays. And you just have to look at that. And I think that that's something that, as a player and as a player's agent, that you would certainly weigh. And so maybe it's not as no-brainer as we think. I mean, it certainly looks from the outside like, why would he not pick up that $30 million? Because he's never going to get anything close to that probably ever again. But there is something to be said for if he could sign a 4 year contract that's going to be worth double what he's going to make in 1 year, and he gets that protection, that longevity. It's always that's always the rub, right? That you think back to like The Last Dance and Scottie Pippen wanting financial security. So he signs a long 7 year contract that by the end of it, he's grossly underpaid. But guess what? You traded that long-term security for a bigger payday in the short term. So those are always things that players have to weigh, and it may not be as clear-cut as we think, but I was not at all surprised to see that Drummond picked up the option and that he's going to be a Cavalier at least through, I would guess, through the trading deadline.
Yep. All right. Really what we wanted to talk about. So we'll go, I guess we'll go in chronological order because that probably makes the most sense, right, Mike?
Good.
So we make sure we talk about everything. So the first big trade, there were a few rumors, but we'll get to those maybe at the end. But the first big trade was the CP3 trade. Now, the Phoenix Suns got CP3 for Abdel Nader. I don't know who that, or Chris Paul and Abdel Nader. I don't know who that is. I've never heard of that guy before in my life. Got traded from Oklahoma City for Kelly Oubre, Ricky Rubio, Ty Jerome, Jalen, I don't know that guy, or 2020 and a 2022 first round pick. This has to be Phoenix saying, all right, we need to get someone to go with Devin Booker and to be a good leader and DeAndre Ayton. And I mean, I think, you know, Phoenix obviously had a really good time at the bubble. I think this is an interesting move for them. I think this is further is going to cement the fact that I don't think Chris Paul is ever winning an NBA championship, because I just don't see the Phoenix Suns competing for an NBA championship. And, I mean, is he really going to get a contract when this contract's up? I mean, I can't imagine they're going to trade – another team's going to take Chris Paul on. This is his third team in 3 years, and this contract, I think this is probably the end of the road on this contract. And then what's he going to do and sign up, do like a Jason Kidd or Steve Nash when he retired? I don't know. I don't think there's any chance that Chris Paul is winning an NBA championship at this point.
Well, okay. No, I don't think the Phoenix Suns, the way they're currently constituted, are an NBA championship team. So I think we can probably safely assume that in the next 2 years that the Phoenix Suns are not going to win an NBA title. But I do think that this is certainly an interesting move all the way around. It's an interesting move that CP3 wanted to go to Phoenix, and clearly there's something going on, some relationship between him and Devin Booker that precipitated this and made this something that was palatable to Paul, because I don't think you could look at it and say this is a place where you're going to automatically win a title. And of course, we all heard the rumors that he only wanted to go and play either in New York or Los Angeles. So that clearly didn't happen. So somewhere along the line, who knows what information is true, what information is not true. What we do know is that it is clearly the Phoenix Suns putting some accelerant on what happened in the bubble, where they went 8-0. They looked really good. It feels like and looked like Booker was ready to take that next step and become not just a fringe all-star player, but one of the 10 best players possibly in the league based off what he did in the bubble. Now, is he really that at this point? I'm not sure. Does Chris Paul theoretically maybe inch him closer where you can have somebody setting you up for easy shots and getting you the ball in places that you like to have it, and having one more guy who can space the floor? So instead of playing with Ricky Rubio and his shaky jumper, now you're playing with Chris Paul, who's going to knock down open shots when teams double team you. And of course, you got Ayton down low and doing the things that he does. And it's definitely an interesting team. And when you look at what Phoenix gave up, they gave up probably, I guess, clearly they just, you swap out Chris Paul for Ricky Rubio, and Ricky Rubio is a valuable player and a good player, but in essence, you've upgraded that position by sending out Rubio and bringing in Paul. And I think the big piece of this trade is Kelly Oubre. And yet, when Phoenix was in the bubble doing what they did, Oubre was injured. It wasn't even there. So they really didn't lose. I mean, they do lose a piece, because I think Oubre is a good player, and I think he could definitely help them, and he's probably going to help Oklahoma City or help whoever they end up flipping him to next. But he wasn't a piece of what they did when they went 8-0 in the bubble, so you're not really missing out on that. And then the other two guys, Ty Jerome and Jalen Lake, who I have no idea. I don't know who that is either. So clearly, neither one of those guys is going to be impactful on Phoenix's roster, or would have been impactful on Phoenix's roster. And then they send out a 2022 first round pick. So to me, there's very little downside from Phoenix's point of view, because I don't think what they sent out were things that make or break what they were going to do this year anyway. And they didn't have to gut the roster. They kept their best players. So you still have Cam Johnson, who you drafted last year. You still have Mikal Bridges, who you drafted the year before, who are both good, solid 3-and-D wings, both with maybe slightly different strengths, but clearly two very good players that you want to have on your roster. Ayton got a lot better last year, and I think maybe he's ready to take another step. And don't forget, this guy was the number one pick in the draft. And I know it was a mistake, because you could have had Luka, but the guy clearly has talent, and I think that there's a path for Phoenix to be much, much better. And we know that Chris Paul, say what you want about him, and he has his faults and there's some limits to him, and he has kind of a prickly personality, as has been described in his various stops. But the fact remains, the guy plays point guard the way it was meant to be played, and he's going to make them better as long as he stays healthy. So overall, I say a good trade for Phoenix, because you didn't mortgage the future. It's not like they had to give up a bunch of draft assets. It's not like they had to give up a bunch of stuff that was going to be critical to their roster this year, especially when you bring in and replace what you sent out with Chris Paul. I like the trade for Phoenix. I like it for Oklahoma City, because, again, they're just building up their war chest of assets, whether that's to actually exercise those assets or whether that's to eventually use those in a trade to try to acquire another superstar who becomes available at some point. You look at what I'd like to stack up. I probably should do this, but I'd like to stack up what Oklahoma City has in terms of draft assets versus what New Orleans has in terms of draft assets. It's like they probably have half the draft picks.
Well, David Griffin, I guess that's where we're going now, because Robert Covington to the Blazers for Trevor Ariza. And a few picks.
That's a good trade for Portland.
Yeah, it's a great trade for Portland. And, I mean, Houston is really unloading some money. They're getting ready, and we'll talk about where they're going in a minute here.
Do you want to score more? Training with the Shotticle is the easiest way to score more. the game is changing, and data scientists are determining the best ways to score. Millions of computer simulations determine where to hit the backboard for the highest percentage shots, and when it's best to use the backboard. The Shoticle provides those highest percentage shots. From beginners to next-level athletes, the Shoticle is helping players increase their shooting percentages. Visit Shoticle.com now and start scoring more.
Okay, Milwaukee and New Orleans. This is ridiculous. Okay, Milwaukee Bucks. Earth to Milwaukee. I know you're trying to save Giannis. Let me tell you a story. It was 2008, 2009, the Cavaliers unloaded all their draft assets, unloaded everything. And guess who didn't stay? LeBron didn't stay because there was no winning, okay? This is, I'm sorry, Mike, this is asinine. This trade is asinine, I think. Milwaukee gets Jrue Holiday in a second rounder. They gave up Eric Bledsoe, George Hill, and 5 first round picks. Now, listen, Jrue Holiday is a good player. He is not a top 25 NBA player. I can't believe they gave up this much. And I know they got Bogdanovich too. Okay, in the separate trade, the other trade Milwaukee made, they got Bogdanovich and Justin James, don't know who that is. They traded DiVincenzo, Ilyasova, and DJ Wilson. I just don't understand this from Milwaukee's point of view. I think this is way, way, way too much they gave up. And David Griffin, I applaud you, sir. This is probably the best haul for a not superstar player anyone's ever gotten. Your reaction, Mike.
Okay, I disagree with you. I disagree with you. And no. Let me tell you why.
Mike, come on. You're in the Milwaukee Bucks.
Listen.
Oh my God.
Okay. So
you want to move to Milwaukee?
My whole extended family is in Milwaukee, so I have some kind of kismet with Milwaukee. God. Anyway, okay. Let me make the case for this trade for the Bucks. Let me make the case for it. So you can't run it back with this same roster again, would you agree? Wait, just stop. We're going to answer one question at a time, man. We're going to go through the whole thought process here. So question number one is, you can't run back the same roster and go back and have lost 2 years in a row. There's just no way you can do that, correct? Okay, so you have to make fundamental changes to your roster because the roster as it was constructed clearly was not good enough to be able to get you even out of the Eastern Conference playoffs into the finals. So there's no doubt that you have to do something in order to shake it up. One of the somethings that had to be done was which guy for the Bucks clearly had to be shipped out? Bledsoe, right? I mean, there's no doubt that Bledsoe could not be on the roster next year. One, Bucks fans hated him at this point because he was just terrible in the playoffs 2 straight years in a row. And yeah, he played all defensive team. You know, he was first team all defensive team last year. And he's a really good defender. But ultimately, you can't afford to have a guy around Giannis that plays the point guard position that just can't make a shot. I mean, there's just no way around it. In the playoffs, he was god awful on offense. So you had to get Bledsoe out of there. All right, so now you start looking at what can we do realistically in order to keep Giannis, in order to make him believe that we have an opportunity to win, that we can.
I got an answer, Mike. An answer. Chris Paul. If you gave all this for Chris Paul, I could buy it.
Okay, wait.
Maybe Chris Paul shot that down. Maybe he shot it down and said, I don't want to go there. But I can't believe that he would shut that down to go play with Giannis. I can't believe that. I'm telling you right now, Milwaukee could not pull the Chris Paul trade out, so they went for some second rate player. I'm sorry, Jrue Holiday. I like you a lot, but this is a terrible move, Mike. Come on.
All right. So what I'm hearing here is that you are not a fan of Jrue Holiday.
I don't listen. He's always hurt. I'm looking at his career games played, okay? He has not played more than... He's played 70 games in 4 of his NBA seasons. 4. He's played had seasons where he's played 30.
How many games did he play last year?
He played 61. He played 67 the year before that. The year before that, he played 81. Okay, great, awesome.
All right, for some reason, my page doesn't have a link to Jrue Holiday. So how old is Jrue Holiday?
Jrue Holiday is 29.
So here's the argument. Okay, here's the argument. You trade for Chris Paul, right? You trade for Chris Paul.
Okay. How many years of control does the Milwaukee Bucks have of Jrue Holiday? Do you know the answer to that question, Mike?
I think he's only 1 year. I think he only has this.
Exactly. Okay, so 1 year.
Look, let me explain.
These
are all good arguments, but let me. So Chris Paul at his age. I don't know that I believe that if you're talking about a guy being able to be healthy over the course of a regular season and a playoff run, I'm a little dubious that Chris Paul is that guy. And Jrue Holiday, 29 years old. Giannis is what, 25? Bogdanovich is 28. Chris Middleton is probably 27, 28 probably, somewhere in there. So you theoretically have – 4 guys now who are in the prime of their career. You got to figure that in today's NBA that Jrue Holiday has a lot of years left to still be a very, very good and productive player. When you give up Eric Bledsoe, you give up one of the things that made the Bucks really good, which is their defense the last couple of years. But Jrue Holiday is probably on the same level and equal to Eric Bledsoe on the defensive end of the floor, if not better, because he has a little bit more size. So you're not weakening your defense, and your offense is improving by leaps and bounds. Jrue Holiday is a way, way better offensive player, much better shooter, much better fit around Giannis, much younger than, say, trading for Chris Paul. I agree that giving up what they gave up for Jrue Holiday, which is probably similar to what the Lakers had to give up to get Anthony Davis, and clearly Jrue Holiday is not in the class of Anthony Davis. So yes, I agree that they gave up a lot. But when you really look at it, you say the first round swap rights. So the only way that those swap rights are worth anything is if Giannis leaves, because if Giannis is still there, I don't care what the rest of the roster looks like, the Bucks are going to be good. And I mean, that might not be championship good, but they're going to be good. So if you're Milwaukee and you're looking at those pick swaps, you're saying those are never going to get exercised as long as we – sure.
Hey, Mike, can I ask you a question? You said Eric Bledsoe's a better – or Jrue Holiday's a better shooter than Eric Bledsoe.
Are you going to give me some regular season numbers that are totally bogus that don't mean anything when Bledsoe's –
I'm just saying field goal percentage over the last 5 years, Eric Bledsoe shot better than Jrue Holiday.
Eric Bledsoe's 3-point percentage in the playoffs and give me that stat once you have it.
Well, do you want me to look up Jrue Holiday's? Because he's not going to have anything because he can't get to the playoffs.
He had a monster playoff series back against the Portland Trailblazers the year they played the Pelicans. The Pelicans won, beat the Blazers 4-0. Holiday was fantastic in that series. Let's put it this way. I have no confidence in Eric Bledsoe. I have none. So Bledsoe had to be shipped out. So you bring in Holiday. Those pick swaps, if you're Milwaukee, you're just saying to yourself, if Giannis is here, then those pick swaps are irrelevant. And if he's gone, he's gone. Like, if you're Milwaukee, this is your one chance. Because if he leaves, the last time you had a superstar, you had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in the 70s, and he wanted out. Now you have Giannis. All indications seem to be that he's not going to force a trade, that there's a lot of people thinking that he's going to sign that extension, and which means he's going to be there for 5 years, which again means those pick swaps are irrelevant. It also means that those first round picks are going to be a lot less valuable if he's on the roster. If you're talking about giving up picks in the 20s, it doesn't matter that much. If Giannis leaves and those picks become valuable, I mean, it's almost like Milwaukee's kind of like Cleveland. It's a graveyard anyway. I mean, even if you have a bunch of top five picks over and over again, unless you get lucky and you hit on the guy, does it really matter? I'm not sure it does. So I think the question is Drew Holiday the best guy they could have gotten? And, you know, obviously we'll never know that, but I do know that Drew Holiday fits really, really well what Milwaukee wants to do defensively, and he's also a much better offensive player than Eric Bledsoe. And you can give me whatever stats you want. I watched Eric Bledsoe the last two playoffs just completely be awful, and I don't think you can run that back a third time. So I like bringing in Holiday. Bogdanovich is good. He's 28 years old. He averaged 15 a game last year.
I buy it. Listen, I buy into the Bogdanovich trade. I think that was a great move.
So now you look at your core. You look at your cores.
Who's left on their roster?
Their depth is, you know, their depth is going to be is definitely questionable at this point. So they're going to have some work to do on the fringes with signing free agents and bringing guys in and whatever. But your top four guys are now Middleton, Giannis, Drew Holiday, Bogdanovich. All those guys, you know, one of the things that Milwaukee struggled with was guys who could make plays for other people. And when Giannis couldn't do that, and now Drew Holiday can make plays for other people, Bogdanovich can shoot it and put it on the floor and do some things. Middleton, if you ask him to not be the primary guy, the only guy out on the floor that can create things. So now if he's out there with Holiday or he's out there with Bogdanovich when Giannis sits for his 18 minutes, as long as Coach Bud continues to be the coach, then I think now you've put yourself in position, if you're Milwaukee, to be able to have a more dynamic roster. You put yourself in a position where your team can do more things. You're more flexible. And did they give up a lot? Yeah, they gave up a ton. But I think their argument would be, we didn't mortgage the future for old guys. We didn't mortgage our future for one-dimensional guys who can't do things. We didn't mortgage our future for guys who are over the hill. We didn't mortgage our future for guys who don't fit with what we're trying to do. I think they got two guys who fit what they want, fit what they need, and both are young enough that they could still be playing at a very, very high level as Giannis enters his late 20s, which theoretically will be his prime. And you got to figure he's going to continue to get better. I know their depth was hurt. I know giving up DiVincenzo hurts a little bit because he's a guy who potentially could develop, but really he was the only valuable young player they had on their roster. So as much as they gave up, I really like this trade for Milwaukee because at least it gives them a fighting chance to be able to compete and put some pieces around Giannis that make them better in the short term. They potentially can sign both of these guys to longer term contracts. And it's not like they're signing. It's not like they traded for two guys who are 33 and 34. They traded for a guy who's 28 and Bogdanovich and a guy who's 29 and Drew Holiday. So those are both guys that theoretically could sign 3 or 4 year contracts and be at their peak or close to their peak during that entire contract run, which if you're Giannis, that's all you can ask is having good quality players around you that fit your timeline. So I know they gave up a lot, but I like this trade for Milwaukee or this combination of trades.
Well, Mike, I think you're probably in the minority. Maybe I'm wrong in that statement. I think you're in the minority.
All right, you tell me though. Let's look at what else could they do? What did you want them to do? What else do you want them to do? What do you think they could get? Who's out there realistically? I'm not saying I know who else is out there or what else they could have done. And yeah, again, they gave up a lot. They gave up a lot. But if Giannis stays and if this works, you're going to give up a bunch of first-round picks that are in the 20s, and you're never going to have to give up those pick swaps. And maybe Milwaukee knows. You got to figure that in the course of doing this, that they've had conversations with Giannis, right?
You would have thought that the Cavs had conversations with LeBron.
But theoretically.
The first time round.
And again, I'm just saying theoretically, because I obviously have no knowledge whatsoever. The stories coming out of Milwaukee, the stories coming out of the league seem to be that Giannis is not a guy who's going to force a trade 2 years into a 5-year contract. He's not a guy who's necessarily looking to leave Milwaukee to build a business empire. He seems like a guy who may be content, happy to continue to work on his game and work with the city of Milwaukee, work with the Bucks to try to build a championship team. And so if you're Milwaukee and you've already had that conversation with him and you feel 90% confident, 95% confident, you've looked him in the eye and he said, hey, I'm going to come back, or hey, I'm going to, maybe he doesn't sign his extension this year. Maybe he waits and signs it after next season. I don't know. But you got to believe that they've had that conversation. And if he's given them every indication that he's going to come back, like I said, that draft haul becomes way less valuable if Giannis is in Milwaukee, because they're going to be good. Now, they may not be championship good, like I said, but they're going to be good. And those picks are going to be at the back end of the first round, which makes them a lot less valuable than it would be if he leaves and they go in the tank and those are top five, you know, those are top five picks.
I just have a problem here, Mike. And it is, I don't see this roster winning the East now. I don't. They're going to be so top heavy.
Coach Bud's got the whole regular season to play his guys. Giannis is only going to play, I think his plan this year is to play him 16 minutes a game so he can get his bench lots of minutes. Maybe that's the front office's ploy, is to make the bench so terrible that Giannis has to play 44 minutes in a playoff game.
All right. Well, we're on record.
You're on record against this trade. I'm on record for this trade. I want
to be clear. I'm on record for I'm happy for the Bogdanovich trade. I'm hating on Drew Holiday. Because Drew Holiday, let's put him in a tier, Mike. I just want to put him in a tier here. Where does Drew Holiday rank in the league? Where does he rank, Mike?
I'd say he's probably in the top. I'd say he's probably ranks between 20 and 30 in the league, I would say.
All right. Well, that's higher than I'd have
to go through the whole list. But I think what sets him apart, too, is that he's a two-way player, that he's a really, really good defensive player. Good offensive player.
Yeah.
Good offensive player. Exceptional defensive player. Which, again, fits what Milwaukee wants to do. It's a lot to give up. Is Drew Holiday a second superstar to put next to Giannis? No, he's not. Is Milwaukee's second best player as good as some of the other second best players in the league? Is he as good as Anthony Davis? No. Is he as good as whatever guy? Is he as good as Paul George? Maybe, based on what we saw. If we see Pandemic P next year in the playoffs, is he as good as whoever the second player is on the Nets? Probably not. Is he as good as Simmons or Embiid on the Sixers? Probably not. But
no,
you know, are you betting on Giannis developing? Are you betting on the fact that now you have a roster that has some more flexibility and can do some more things, and can somebody else besides Giannis can create offense and get their own shot or set somebody else up or knock down threes in playoff situations? I think Milwaukee has improved themselves. They got some work to do on the second part, you know, on the back half of the roster, and they're going to have to fill out what they have left and really to try to improve their depth. But as far as what they can throw out there as a starting lineup, and I know, did you tell me Brook Lopez, did he?
He opted out because he was going to player out for $5 million.
Obviously, that's a priority for them to re-sign Brook Lopez. But if you roll out Brook Lopez, Giannis, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, and Bogdanovich, I mean, that's a pretty good line. That's a pretty good lineup to roll out there. You have, when you do that, you have four guys that can all shoot it from 3-point range, except for Giannis. And that's the kind of team you want to put around him, is guys who can shoot. And you still have, that's still a quality defensive team. Bogdanovich is probably the weakest defender out of that group, but they're still long. They still have, you know, a great guard defensively with Holiday taking the place of Bledsoe.
Well, now I'm reading. So It wasn't Brook Lopez. It was Robin Lopez that opted out, I think. I thought I read that it was Brook Lopez, so I want to make sure that I'm at...
I thought Brook Lopez signed like a relatively, I mean, a pretty cheap deal.
Yeah, so Robin Lopez declined the $5 million player option and became a free agent. Sorry, I kind of forgot Robin Lopez was even in the league, and I also thought $5 million was a lot for Robin Lopez, because I don't, I mean, Brook Lopez is far superior to Robin.
Absolutely. So anyway, I like the trade for the Bucks. I think it's a good move, and I think we won't be able to judge it until the playoffs is the reality. So whatever happens in the regular season really doesn't matter. We're going to judge what happens when we get to playoff time and whether or not the Bucks can get out of the East or not. So we'll see.
Okay.
That was
we spent a lot of time on that. All right. So I guess the last trade, and I'm off the page now because I was clicking around here. Hold on. The last trade we have to talk about, actually, do we have anything else? I mean, there's the rumor of the Schroeder going to the Lakers for Danny Green and a first-round draft pick. I mean, that's obviously, I mean, Dennis Schroeder is a pretty good pickup, and it sounds like Rondo's not going to be back. And, you know,
I saw Rondo you know, potentially to Atlanta.
Yeah, I don't know. Does that make sense to you? Does Rondo to Atlanta make any sense? I mean,
not really.
Is Rondo just trying to get as many jerseys from different teams as he can?
I hear so many weird things about Atlanta, what they're trying to do and why they're trying to do it. It seems like ownership really wants to push to win, and that's what Trae Young wants to do, whereas maybe the GM and front office is, you know, wants to have a more patient rebuild, but looks like ownership and Trae Young are going to win out, and they're going to end up doing some win now moves. I'm not sure what's going on there, and whether or not Rondo fits, I don't know that he fits next to Trae Young, but whatever. Atlanta's, I guess, basically at this point still irrelevant. Schroeder as a pickup for the Lakers is, I'd much rather have Schroeder on my team at this point than Danny Green, and that first round draft pick that would go with Danny Green, again, just like we were talking about with the Bucks. You know, that's the 28th pick in the draft, which could you turn that into a useful player? Maybe. But for the Lakers, they're probably not going to turn that into a guy that's going to contribute in the next year or two to a championship run. So if you can turn Danny Green into Schroeder, that to me, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Okay. I guess with the elephant in the room, we've gone 43 minutes and we haven't talked about the Houston Rockets. I don't even have. There are so many different reports coming out. You know, they got Harden's unhappy, Westbrook's unhappy, Harden's unhappy. Harden's not happy that that the owner supports Trump, and then there were so many tweets about, does he realize most NBA owners would support him? Minus I think Lacob from the Warriors and Mark Cuban and maybe the Milwaukee owner is what I saw. Pretty much everyone else supports Trump, so you're going to. And someone said, well, maybe Brooklyn Nets owner. I don't know anything about I don't even know who owns the Brooklyn Nets anymore. It's not Prokhorov anymore.
I don't know who it is either.
Well, he owned the team for like a hot second, huh? Anyways, regardless, the whole Houston Rockets debacle, they're unhappy that they want a Ty Lue and they didn't get their guy. So now they're gone. They want to check out. And, you know, I have to give it to someone, Mike, and I never thought this person would be mentioned on our podcast. Kendrick Perkins said like 6 days ago that Westbrook saying trying to request a trade means that he thinks he's been hearing that Harden wants to go to the Nets. And he said that, and when I first heard it, I was like, what is he talking about? And then all of a sudden, it started getting reported by Woj and Shams and all this, and I'm like, man, is Kendrick Perkins the next Woj?
Hey, he's connected, this? Man. He's connected within the league. He's connected. He's
connected. But, I mean, I have a hard time with this. I don't like the way that this is rolling out the NBA. Just everyone just basically strong arming themselves wherever the heck they want to go and whatnot. If I'm the Houston Rockets, I say I don't trade Harden and I make him stick it out, because if you trade him, you're going to be rebuilding anyway. So if he refuses to play, then he just refuses to play.
You saw that report today that came out that it said. The quote was that the Rockets are willing to get uncomfortable and keep both of those guys around if they don't get the package of whatever it is that they're looking for from their trade partners, which clearly that's what you should say. And hopefully that's what you do. Hopefully you don't end up trading these guys for packages of things that you look at what, and I'm on record obviously as being a hardened detractor, but you look at what New Orleans is able to get for Jrue Holiday, and you have to start looking at, well, what can you get for James Harden? And I think, I don't know if you saw it, but there was an article on ESPN.com that just talked about the places theoretically where Harden could go. And we know the number one, I guess, his choice from what's been reported is to go to Brooklyn. And so you start looking at what could Brooklyn throw in there. Brooklyn basically has all their own first round picks. So they own all their own picks from now until 2027. So basically everything there is tradable. And then I guess the big player piece would be Caris LeVert, who's a young guy who's like 26, I think. So Houston would get him coming back, and then you'd probably have to throw in like Spencer Dinwiddie and Torian Prince and maybe Jared Allen as well. So you'd get some players, you'd rebuild with those players, and then you'd probably get, again, a mother load of picks, whether that would be three first-round picks and some pick swaps or whatever it might be. So I guess the interesting thing about Brooklyn is not – it's more what would that team look like? Could those three guys play together and be functional? And I say no. I mean, I just don't think you look at what kind of the history of all three of those guys, and each in their own way is kind of a little bit of an oddball, for lack of a better way of saying it. And I find it hard to believe that all three of those guys and their egos and just kind of what they want from the game, that they could coexist. I'd love to see it happen, because in a lot of ways, I'd love to see it implode, which is kind of what I think would happen. I mean, maybe he goes there and there's a honeymoon period, but I don't know. I don't see that team. That team winning a title if those are the three best guys. I just don't.
Hey, listen, Westbrook for John Wall was a rumor today.
I don't know what that does for either one of the teams.
I mean, the Wizards are definitely better because at least Westbrook would play.
Well, I think Wall's John supposed Wall to be able to can't play. But he's coming off.
God. He hasn't played basketball in 2.5 years.
Yeah, I don't know if you're Houston. I guess you.
He's coming off an Achilles and then falling down the stairs.
I mean, you're talking about they're trading two guys who, the honest truth is, nobody really wants either of those guys on their roster, especially not at the salaries that they have. If they're making a lot less money, then maybe they both become theoretically useful players. But
I think there's one team that would be interested in getting Westbrook. The New York Knickerbockers. And the only reason is because I think that would at least put someone that people would want to watch. I mean, I know that's a hypothetical, like getting players, people, fans into the stadium and stuff, but I just think, you know,
I mean, I Westbrook has star interested. Power, so put Westbrook in New York and putting up the stats that he does, and Westbrook plays hard, and I think that probably New York fans would love him from that standpoint. Like, he's a guy who's going to give tremendous effort, and it's just that sometimes his effort maybe isn't directed in the best direction. It seems like he's sort of steered his way into, almost played himself into a caricature role of what he used to be. He's now just doubled down on it, or tripled down on it, or quadrupled down on it, as the case may be. And so I think if you're the Knicks, or you're any one of these teams that's at the bottom of the standings or even in the middle of the standings, and you're thinking about getting Russell Westbrook, the fact that he still has 3 years on his contract and that last year is $44 million – to me, if you have any hope or any thought that you're going to sign a free agent from next year's free agent class, then you have to keep that space. And I guess you could always say, hey, any contract is tradable. Nobody thought Chris Paul's contract was tradable, and now that contract's been traded twice. So anybody, I guess, is tradable, and you can always free up cap space. If suddenly Giannis said he wanted to go play for the Knicks next summer and they had Russell Westbrook on the roster, they'd figure out a way to ship him off, and you could attach draft picks and other things to clear the space that you would need. But I don't know. I wouldn't be too hot to sign Russell Westbrook. You and I were talking yesterday that if Russell Westbrook signed here in Cleveland, would that make me want to go buy tickets to watch the Cavs? And for me, the answer to that question would be no. I don't really.
What about James Harden?
And that might cause me to find another team to root for as my hometown team. I would not. I don't think I would enjoy the James Harden.
One of my coworkers was saying, "Well, do you think the Cavs would get interested in James Harden?" And I said, "If the Cavs get James Harden, I might burn some Cavaliers shirts or something." Well, they'd be
interested. I mean, why wouldn't you be interested? They just don't have what he, you know. He doesn't want to come here, obviously, and two, what do you have to offer? Although, you know, I'm looking at this ESPN article that basically has the destinations, the places that realistically could trade for Harden, where he might realistically want to play. So clearly, number one, they had the Brooklyn Nets. Then they had Denver. Talking about Denver being able to trade Gary Harris and Will Barton.
I hope not. I like that. I like Denver a lot. Please don't go there.
And no, I don't think Denver. To me, Harden is not a good fit with Murray, and so I don't think that's a realistic trade. Denver obviously has a piece that everybody would want in Michael Porter Jr. So as long as Porter Jr. is there, especially when he's on this rookie contract, he becomes a guy that when superstars become available, if they're available, Denver is always going to be a team that's mentioned, because if you throw Michael Porter in there, now suddenly you become – that's a trump card that a lot of other teams don't have in terms of a young player with a really big upside. If he ends up fulfilling his potential, he's a guy who could be an all-star player down the road. I'm not convinced necessarily that be the case, especially not in Denver, but nonetheless, he's a guy that I think is pretty highly valued around the league. I don't see Harden going to Denver. I just don't. To me, he's not a really good fit with Harris and Jokic, so I don't think that's too realistic. The other teams that they mentioned were the Warriors. The Warriors, because they have the number two pick in tomorrow night's draft, and then they also have Minnesota's, I think, top three protected first rounder next year, which is expected to be a stronger draft. And then maybe, you know, they throw in some of their own first round picks, or, you know, there's a couple players, you know, you throw Wiggins in there and, you know, maybe you get something done there. The Sixers, clearly Daryl Morey being the GM. And then there's the whole speculation of maybe you just straight up trade Ben Simmons for Harden. To me, that's the most interesting trade.
What, him going to the
him
Sixers?
Him getting traded to Philadelphia. Because I think it's interesting going both directions, because it's interesting in that I think it would be trying to figure out what Harden and Embiid could potentially look like together, where you have Embiid in the post and you have Harden, who can obviously shoot the ball far better than Ben Simmons, who now you're not having that positional overlap. And then conversely, you take and you put Simmons as the lone superstar on his own team, and now maybe Houston builds the type of roster, just like they built a roster around James Harden and his style of play. Maybe you build a team around Ben Simmons and his style of play, and it'll be interesting to see what that type of roster building looked like down there in Houston. So if I had to pick a Harden trade out of all the ones that I've heard mentioned, that's the one that I would probably most like to see. I don't know how likely.
Yeah, I don't think it's happening, because I don't think they're going to go to Morey and do it.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I think there's zero chance they're doing that.
I'd say there's a greater than zero chance, but I don't think it's very likely. I don't think it's likely. I think the most likely spot for him is Brooklyn. I don't know. Did you read the speculation tonight that Boston was frantically trying to trade Kemba and get Gordon Hayward to opt in or opt out or whatever they needed to do to be able to clear space, to be able to trade and get pieces and put together some kind of package for Harden?
That would be my favorite thing, because Simmons would freaking blow his like he would be so mad. He hates Harden. I think he's on the same pace as we are. He would be so upset. I don't know that he would be able to stand it, Mike. You just sold me on what my favorite move would be.
I would like to send him to Boston. Obviously, I'm not a Boston fan. So if I could inflict some pain on the Celtics by shipping.
Inflict the pain on the Celtics and suck all the life out of Jalen Brown.
Shipping Harden there would be good. Yeah, I think the writing's on the wall. I think he ends up in Brooklyn and we just see what happens. That's my take on it. I think that's where he ends up.
All right.
Up.
All right, we're already at an hour here, Mike. Let's talk about what's happening tomorrow night.
All right,
NBA draft, and we're gonna expertly here, Mike. We're gonna expertly do an NBA discuss an NBA mock draft, and we're just gonna do the top. What you want to do? Top like seven, eight picks?
Let's do ten.
Okay. So we'll see how this goes. I'm an expert, Mike.
All right. Which mock draft are you reading off of? Just so people can follow along.
I'm not. I'll be honest with you. I'm not even there yet. Hold on.
Get somewhere, man. Listen. Get somewhere.
I know who I want the cast to take.
All right. So let's set it up. I'll let you go with. I'll let you take the odd number picks because that'll let you make the Cavs selection. How about that? So that means you have to go one, and then
I'm taking Anthony Edwards. And you know, I've seen some floating out there that Minnesota and Golden State have talked about a flip. I've seen that. I don't know if that's going to happen, but it's been rumored. But I think that he would be a good pick. I think Anthony Edwards is in my opinion, everything that I've read, he's the person that is, you know, a lot of people have him ranked two behind LaMelo. And, you know, I think my problem with LaMelo is there's a lot of baggage there. So I'm going Anthony Edwards.
I'm not a big fan of LaMelo. I think I said it last week with Matt Maurer that of any guy in the first round, you know, that's the Cavs are considering, I'd probably be the least excited if they ended up with LaMelo Ball, simply because I think he has maybe the biggest potential to be just a huge bust. And I know that people also think he has a huge upside because of his ability to pass the ball and whatever. But to me, all the baggage that comes with the guy and just the way that he's kind of grown up in losing environments and just bouncing all over the place, that's not a guy I want any part of when I'm trying to build a positive culture. So number two pick is the Golden State Warriors. Assuming that they stay with the pick and don't trade it, which who knows what's going to happen there. But I think if they stay at the pick, to me, I think James Wiseman makes the most sense, both in the short term as a guy who can fill a need on their current roster. And maybe he only plays 10 or 12 minutes a game, but he's a guy who can have an impact at a position that they need somebody currently. And I think long-term, he's a guy who has a lot of potential. And he's a guy who, if he ends up in Golden State in a good culture with good teammates, with good coaching, I think he's a guy who could develop into being a really, really good player, a superstar. Hard to project a center in today's game anymore, really being a superstar. So I don't know if I'd go that far, but certainly he can be one of the better big men in the NBA if he gets into the right system and gets the right people around him. And I think in Golden State, compared to maybe some of these other situations in the top five, I think any of these guys would be lucky to get picked by the Warriors compared to some of these other teams that are at the top of the draft. So I'd go Wiseman at number two.
All right. So I for the next pick, that would be Charlotte. I don't like to make this pick, but I think if I'm Charlotte, and I'm trying to get any kind of people to buy into the Charlotte Bobcats, the Charlotte Hornets. I don't know that Michael Jordan would even come close to taking LaMelo Ball, but if you want to make a splash, I think you have to take him here if you're Charlotte. Because, I mean, their roster is pitiful. You agree with that statement,
yeah,
right,
Charlotte,
Mike?
Charlotte doesn't really have a whole lot to build on it.
So I think you got to get some kind of, and he's probably got the most potential, like, star, I don't want to say star power, but, like, you know, who am I going to sell a lot of jerseys of this year? And I know that's not really the best way to look at it, but I think if you're Charlotte, you got to do everything, and if you're grasping at straws to get people to even pay attention to you, I think that they should take LaMelo Ball at three if he's available.
All right, so that means that we've kind of gone with the conventional wisdom that those three guys are the top three players in this draft. I think that's been sort of the consensus since the beginning. There's been some talk that mostly I would say about LaMelo, that he could be a guy that potentially would fall out of that top three, partly because I think a lot of people think that Charlotte really wants a big man. And if Wiseman goes number two to the Warriors, that then that means at number three that Charlotte might take Onyeka Okongwu from US.
But he's 6'9". I mean, he's not a center. I know they list him as a center, but he's 6'9". LeBron's
right,
the same
it,
size
as him.
Just
in terms
him.
Of the game, I'm just saying that he's theoretically, positionally, where he plays on the floor, he plays a big man role. Now, good, he's not 7'2", but he is playing a big man position, kind of like a traditional power forward body type guy. So anyway, all right, so we're,
all right,
so we're
you
at
go
number four
number
with
four.
The Chicago Bulls. The Bulls are kind of they're a very, very interesting roster, and it's hard to even know like what they have, because you have two shoot first guards in Kobe White and Zach LaVine, and then you have two young big men who at various points in their careers people have been pretty high on, and yet at the same time they've both had injuries and problems. So we're talking about Markkanen and Wendell Carter. So both of those guys, you don't have any idea yet really what they're going to be. So it's interesting. I'm not sure here what direction Chicago really wants to go with these guys. So I guess if I'm looking at it and I'm saying what I'd want to do is I'd want to get either a point guard in there, or I'd want to get somebody who was another big man who maybe had more of a defensive spin. So I think I'm looking at either a Kongwu or possibly one of the guards, Killian Hayes or Tyrese Halliburton. I think, though, based on what I've seen in terms of value and in terms of which guy I think they might take, I'm going to go with Okongwu for the Bulls at number four.
Well, you didn't take my guy. I'm taking the flyer, man. I think the Cavs should take Toppin. I really do. I like him. I like his attitude. I enjoyed watching him play for Dayton. I watched a lot of Dayton basketball this year. I've got three friends that graduated from Dayton, Freem being one of them, Steve Freem. And I'm sold on Obi Toppin. I want Obi Toppin.
You're not
Cavaliers.
You're not concerned that he's already 22?
Nah. I'm not concerned
about
that at
his
all.
Lack of defense. On a roster that already has two guards, we need scoring,
Mike, because our defense is poor, we need lots of scoring. So Obi Toppin is who I take.
All right, I mean
I'm not going to take this guy from Israel because we've had really bad luck with the foreigners in Cleveland.
Yeah,
so
I would stay away from him. If I was the Cavs, I think I would take the guy who I'm going to take number six for the Atlanta Hawks. And for the Atlanta Hawks, I'm going to take Isaac Okoro from Auburn, who is the guy that I honestly hope the Cavs pick, because defender, guy who plays hard, by all accounts, sort of has a similar, I guess, reputation to what Colin Sexton maybe had coming out, in that he's just a guy who loves being in the gym and working. And to me, if I had to pick one quality of a guy I'd want in my top 10 draft pick, I would want everybody talking about how the guy that I'm drafting just wants to be in the gym and wants to get better. And the knock on Okoro is that he's not a very good shooter. And clearly in today's NBA, if you're not a very good shooter, that's a huge liability. But I do think that shooting can be improved, whereas if a guy is a dog on defense, I'm not quite sure that that's something that gets better over time. I think that's more of a mentality that either you have or you don't. So I would hope that I'm hoping that the Cavs take him at number five, but since he's still there and the Cavs passed on him in our mock draft, I'm going to go ahead and take Isaac Okoro at number six for the Atlanta Hawks.
Hey, my heater's going crazy, man.
It's
getting
that
ready.
That thing's cranked up.
It's telling us we've been going for an hour and 8 minutes.
We're almost there, man. We got four more picks.
We need to wrap this. I know. So I think with my next pick, and I don't know, maybe I'm just drafting for the humor aspect and not really drafting for need, but I'm going to take the Detroit Pistons have had such good luck with the foreigners, such as Darko Milicic. I'm going to pick Denny. I don't know how to say your last
Denny
name.
Evdija.
From
Denny Evdija.
Evdija. I'm going to take Denny Evdija because the Detroit Pistons are going to do well picking another foreigner. So okay. That's where I'm going to go with. Right there. And I think we would agree they need a small forward. I mean, they need every roster position. So I think they're going to take the best available player.
I think most often
there.
I've heard them link to point guards that they really want a point guard. I know LaMelo was working out for them. And I've heard them be linked to some of the other guards in the draft just because I feel like that's kind of the position that I've heard them targeting. But who knows? All right. So that leaves me with the next pick, which is the New York Knicks at number 8. Oof. See if I can do better than a New York Knicks GM and pick somebody good for the Knicks. So I think if you're the Knicks, you're looking for a guy that is going to come in, and I think a guy that you want to be able to take the ball out of RJ Barrett's hands a little bit. So you want a guy that can kind of share the ball handling load. I think for once, if I'm in the case of the Knicks, this is a situation where I don't think I want to swing for the fences. I think I want to take a guy who I know is going to be a quality NBA player for a number of years. And to me, the guy that best fits that description in this draft is Tyrese Halliburton from Iowa State. So I'm going to take Tyrese Halliburton for the New York Knicks with the idea that he comes in, he's a quality guy, he's a quality teammate, he's a guy who maybe doesn't have the huge upside of potentially being an NBA superstar, but he's a guy who I can plug in for the next 10 years. That's going to be an important part of winning basketball, which I'm this new regime in the New York Knicks with the New York Knicks. That's what I'm trying to build is a winning organization. And from everything that I've read and seen, I think Tyrese Halliburton fits that mold. And so I'm going to take him for the Knicks at number 8.
All right. Washington Wizards. So here's the deal. I think if it wasn't for the fact that they've been linked to Westbrook and they've got John Wall on the roster, so they're more likely they're going to have one of the two of them. I would look at someone like Killian Hayes for them. I don't like Patrick Williams on the offensive end of the floor. I think he's not very efficient based on what I've read / seen. I mean, I think this year, Mike, and you can agree or disagree with me, I feel like I'm the least prepared for the NBA draft because we didn't get March Madness, which is what I normally use to evaluate players, because I think that's the biggest moment. Like, you know, I don't typically sit and watch NCAA games in November and December. I tune it on like starting in February when football's over, and that's really when I start. And I didn't really get a lot of that this year, so I don't feel super confident in all these. I'm gonna go with I think I'll go with a guy who has the highest upside, and I think that's Precious. I don't know how to say it. Achiuwa for the Wizards, because A, he's a power forward, which here's what I'm thinking. If they have John Wall or Westbrook and they have Bradley Beal, they've got their guards. They've got the people that are going to handle the ball. But this guy, I think he has the potential to be a really good defender and in the NBA, and he shows really good upside as far as getting having a nose for the basketball. He may not be the best when he's looking like, I don't know what, you know, he's not the best at finding the open guy at all times, but I truly believe that he could make a difference for them. So I'm going to go with Precious, and he went to Memphis. So Memphis is a good school too for NBA talent.
All right, there you go. So we have the last pick, and maybe we'll just end it here at pick number 10, considering how long we've been going. So pick number 10 is the Phoenix Suns. And so I think really what I'm looking at here is there's two guys that are left, and one that has kind of dropped, Killian Hayes, who I think a lot of people definitely feel is going to go in the top 10. And then the other guy I guess I'd consider at this spot is Devin Vassell. So I'm looking at the Suns roster, and basically in the last couple of drafts, they've drafted young 3-and-D guys in Bridges and Cam Johnson. And so that's kind of what Devin Vassell is. And then you look at Killian Hayes and you say, okay, he's a guard. One of his things that maybe he's not as good at is being able to shoot the ball. We just acquired Chris Paul. Do we bring in Killian Hayes where he now becomes kind of our third guard in that rotation with Booker and Chris Paul? He becomes insurance if Chris Paul gets injured. I kind of like that pick for the Phoenix Suns, so I'm going to go with Killian Hayes for the Phoenix Suns.
Okay. That's
a wrap.
Go for it. It's a wrap, man. It's been a long one tonight. Oh, Mike, I didn't even say happy anniversary.
That. Yeah, appreciate that. So 19 years. 19 years. So 19 good years. So we'll see. We'll see what happens tomorrow night. We'll be podcasting again during the NBA draft. So we'll have to be kind of watching it. Well, you'll probably be watching it a little bit more closely than I am, but we'll definitely be keeping an eye on what happens. And clearly we have some rooting interest in the Cavs. And who knows? There's going to be a lot of draft day trades, and things are going to continue to be crazy. It was hard to really imagine that. I don't think 2 weeks ago, I don't think any of us really necessarily saw Harden being on the trading block. And I certainly didn't see the remake of Milwaukee's roster and the way that they were able to remake it, whether you like it like I do or whether you don't like it like Jason. But regardless, they're certainly going to be different. There's no doubt. And the league's going to look a lot different. Like we talked about off the top, at some point here in the next couple of weeks, we're going to do our NBA preview once the rosters are kind of set and training camp starts. Yeah, once the dust settles. And just looking forward to the season and looking forward to the draft. It's been a long time coming with these guys. And hopefully, just like the rest of society, we're hoping that the NBA at some point gets back to normal and that the rest of our lives get back to normal. But for now, let the crazy reign.
That's a good statement. Let the crazy reign. It is the crazy train, my man. It is the crazy train. I'm excited.
Let's wrap it up
though.
One thing before we get out, if you haven't gotten a chance yet, if you are a basketball coach out there and you haven't had a chance to check out our Hoopheads Pod mentorship program, please go on to the hoopheadspod.com website and check that out. We are looking to have an impact on the coaching profession, one coach at a time, matching you up with one of our exceptional high school head coaches to pour into you and help you to improve your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset, and become the best version of yourself. So please check out the Hoopheads Pod mentorship program. Thanks for listening tonight, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com to get started.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.